Our next person to come to the podium is a member of Congress. We appreciate very much that you can join us. It is Congressman Gohmert, who represents the 1st Congressional District of Texas and is currently in his second term in the House of Representatives. He has served as a captain in the U.S. Army. He has been a judge in the District Court and the Court of Appeals, where he served as the Chief Justice in Texas. He is a member in the House of the Judiciary Committee and a number of others. He has come to join with us here at our national convention to talk about policy making in government and to talk about how we can be represented well in Congress. Please welcome the Honorable Louis Gohmert.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you very much. And I want to say how much I appreciate when you heard that I was a U.S. congressman, you didn't boo. That was really nice. You know, as Mark Twain said, one time, suppose I were a congressman, and suppose I were a fool, but I repeat myself. So that feeling has gone on for some time, but it is such an honor and such a pleasure to be with you here at this national convention. And we have obviously have a big, wonderful group from here in the state of Texas at the convention. Sure proud of our group from Texas. And some have better lungs than others. But it is just wonderful. Now, I'm sure you've heard all the stories about how Texans like to brag about how big things are here in Texas and bigger and better. Okay, all right, I'll tell you one more. there was a Texan that was up in Maine, and he was staying in a bed and breakfast for a month, and at each breakfast he was just always bragging to the other people there at the home about how big things were in Texas and how much better things were in Texas. And every time somebody would bring something up, he'd say, well, we got one bigger than that or better than that in Texas. And they got sick of it, so one night they thought they'd play a little trick on him. So they got the biggest Maine lobster that they could find and put it in his bed.
Oh, no.
And so that night after supper, everybody finished supper, and it got to be about 9 o'clock, and they knew he went to bed about that time. So they all waited anxiously to hear if he wouldn't scream when he found out he had something that big in his bed. And sure enough, by the time he got on his pajamas and crawled in bed, they heard this terrible scream, and they all went rushing up to his room and opened the bedroom door, and there he stood looking at this huge lobster in his bed, and he said, my goodness, what is that? And they said, oh, well, in Maine, that's just a Maine, little Maine bed bug.
No!
And by this time, the Texan had recovered and kind of shook himself off, and he said, well, he's a young one, isn't he? So anyway, yeah, we like to brag a little bit. And of course, somebody was telling me in East Texas, where I'm from, that a beautiful young lady had gone into a fabric store. She needed some fabric for a dress. And she found the fabric she wanted, but couldn't find a price tag anywhere. So she took the bolt of fabric up to the counter, the checkout counter, where this young man was, rather brash. And she said, "Excuse me, but can you tell me how much this fabric is? It's just what I need." And he was a little full of himself, and he just said, "Well, for you, it's one kiss for each yard." And so she responded, "Well, I got to have 10 yards. I guess you should go ahead and cut it for me." So he cut her off 10 yards, folded it nicely, put it in the sack. And as he reached out to hand it to her, he kind of puckered up. She took the sack and turned and pointed to a grizzly, haggard-looking old man behind her with chew of tobacco in his mouth and said, "This is my grandfather. He said he was buying it for me." Anyway, well, thank you. You know, I just feel like one of the things I learned, and I just feel it's my personal feeling, but I feel like God has a way of preparing us for what lies ahead. And I didn't foresee years ago that I would be in Washington. But some people say, "Were you ready for all the meanness and the backstabbing and the partisanship, the bickering?" And I explained to them, "Look, I have been a deacon of a Baptist church." And compared to some of those meetings, Washington's just a cakewalk, you know. And some people think that's amusing, except I'm really not kidding. But one of the things I learned in my days as an active deacon at a big Baptist church in Tyler, Texas, is that if you, but I learned that if you disagree with somebody, a good way to deal with that is use a little humor and then say something that's truthful that you can compliment them on before you point out your criticism. And I've used that technique in Congress. I've used it when I've dealt with the president, because sometimes I like the man a great deal, but sometimes we disagree on things. And I've found that it's a good approach. But sometimes you may get all upset with a member of Congress. You may just think, "How could he do this? Doesn't he know?" And I can tell you, folks, a lot of times we don't. We're ignorant, you know. And so let me just tell you, it really makes a difference if you let your congressman know about problems you may have, things that Congress could actually help with. And so sometimes don't just assume your congressman, wherever you are from in the country, don't assume that he knows or she knows about a problem or how stupid some legislation may be or how important it may be. It helps if you tell them. Makes a difference. Now, a couple of years ago, I got a call from one of the most brilliant men that we have in Texas. He lives in Tyler. He is a college history professor. He's also a certified meteorologist. He's a local radio commentator. The fact that he happens to be blind, I don't think makes a whole lot of difference. He's just one of the smartest guys around. And Dr. Bob Peters had called me, and some of y'all know Bob, I bet. Yeah, what a great guy. I mean, I can ask him questions about politics, the weather. You know, in fact, he would have been a good congressman if he'd ever decided to run for it. But since he didn't, they got me. What can you say? But anyway, Bob called and said, "You know, Louis, we got a problem with some of these new cars. They're so quiet, we don't know they're coming." And I said, "Well, gee, I had not thought about that, because my car is not very quiet. It constantly needs a tune-up. You can hear it coming several miles away. So I had not thought about that as a problem. But by him bringing that to my attention, we did some checking and found out that is a problem and it is something we need to deal with. But if Bob hadn't called me, then I wouldn't have known to start looking into the issue and what we could do about it. I take it that trying to make sure that cars emit a sound that can be picked up by those who might not see the car coming. That makes sense, doesn't it? Y'all agree with that, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, and I've always felt like most people that an educated public is a public that is better off and can make better informed decisions.
Right.
And I personally like to listen to books more than read them, because I read thousands of pages each week in Washington as part of my job. And each weekend when I fly home, I like to be able to close my eyes, give them a rest, and plug in some earphones and listen to my book. My wife, Kathy, is here, and she's a wonderful support. And one time she was riding with me. Well, yes, I appreciate thank you. And frankly, I wouldn't be in Congress if it were not for Kathy. But I'd been a judge for a number of years, and there were things that began to bother me so much about things Congress had done, well-meaning, that ended up having too much in the way of adverse consequences. So, and it's part of who I am, and I'm not trying to push my beliefs on anyone else, but it is part of who I am. Kathy and I had prayed about it and wrestled with it, and eventually came to the conclusion that I should run for Congress, that was what we were meant to do. So we didn't, because I had given up so much income when I went to be a judge years ago, we didn't have the money set aside. And in fact, right now, Houston Chronicle reported that I'm the poorest member of Congress from Texas. So. And I will tell you that I don't care what they say, I am the richest man in Congress. So, but we believed it was what we were supposed to do. We completely cashed out both of our requirements, and I would encourage you not to do that. But we did, and believed it was if that was going to bring us to where I was supposed to serve, it was the thing to do. We did it, and I'm grateful to Kathy, except some days I wonder if maybe I shouldn't have gone to Congress, because there are some knuckleheads up there that make life pretty miserable. But anyway, in fact, Kathy, I said, you want to listen to a book? And she said, well, but you are better at listening to books than I am, she said, because you're so oral. And I said, well, if I'm given a choice between being anal and oral, I guess I'm glad to be oral. But anyway, doesn't it make sense, though, that since being educated helps the individual and also helps society, shouldn't we want to encourage everyone, including blind people, to learn all they can from books, including audiobooks? It makes sense. But let me explain something else to you that's been just a real area of frustration in Washington. You know, there are sometimes I believe in a bill, I've pushed a bill, I wanted to see a bill placed and made into law, and then at the last minute somebody's allowed to insert an amendment or a provision in the bill that is something I just can't handle. So I have to vote against a bill I believe in, so hopefully we can get a better bill without the part that I just think is so troublesome. And sometimes that happens. One bill that really irked me with the changes that were made in it was the Americans with Disability Act. That is a great act, a great bill. It has done so much good, and there's more good that needs to be done through Americans with Disability Act. And yet in this Congress, the definition of disability was so expanded that it made me mad, because I felt like it was an insult to people with true disabilities that somebody that doesn't feel good might just claim disabled. So I supported the ADA. I think it is a great law. I think there are things we need to do further. But to allow people that just may malinger and think they want to claim a disability to actually be in the same category with people with true disabilities, I felt like was an insult. And so though I supported the bill, I did not support the expanded definition. And therefore, if you go online and check, you'll see I voted against the bill, not because I disagree with the bill, but I sure did disagree with the definition. And I just wanted you to know, if you later found out, well, he sounded like he supported the kind of legislation I support. Sometimes, you may find out, well, I voted against it. I wanted you to know why. I felt like it was an insult to people with true disabilities. So there you know. But y'all are so gracious. But let me tell you about what, and I don't want to take too much time because they didn't give me a lot of time, and I know I expect a lot of applause on that. Yeah, they didn't give much. And actually, I'm constantly getting comments about my speeches because people say I'm a very restful speaker, that they get a good nap in while I'm talking, and they just enjoy me speaking and kind of catch up on their sleep. But during my years as a judge, I began to notice I was having to sentence more and more women for felony charges, and their social background became more and more aligned, and it really concerned me and angered me. But it was women whose stories were similar. They said they were in high school, and someone, often a family member, would say, look, you know, you're not enjoying school. All you got to do is get pregnant and drop out of school. The government will send you a check. And so they would do that, and then they would find themselves in a rut because the money they get for having a child out of wedlock is not enough to really live any kind of life on. And so then they would say, well, maybe if I have another child, the extra check will help me get by. And they'd have another child and another child. And it's kind of like Tennessee Ernie Ford sang years ago, it puts you another day older and deeper in debt. And that just galled me to no end because I knew that back in the mid-60s, people in Congress with a big heart saw that there were women who had been left in the lurch by some deadbeat dad who wouldn't help take care of their child, and they were struggling to make ends meet. And so somebody in Congress came up with the great idea, well, why don't we just start sending them a check for each child they have out of wedlock? And friends, when that happened, and we advanced 40 years, now 40 years later, you get what you pay for. We paid for children out of wedlock, so we've got lots of them. And some of the greatest contributions in this country have come from people who grew up, maybe some of you, with one parent. And the parent did amazingly well for what they have. But what really struck me is, shouldn't we be given incentives to do the right thing? Because these poor women would be in a rut. They would not see any way out. They would get desperate. And some of them that came before me would say, well, you know what? I can't get ahead on what little the government gives me. I'm going to go get a job. But I need this other part of the child support from the government too, so I just won't tell them. So they wouldn't tell them, they'd get a job, and then they'd end up arrested and in front of me for welfare fraud. And it was just sad. You had a government that lured them into this rut, gave them no way out. Some others would get in the rut and say, you know what, I see that there are drug dealers that make a bunch of money. Maybe I could make a bunch of money in just a short time and get out of it. And then they end up before me for dealing drugs. But I kept coming back. My government lured them into this life that never should have been done. We should have provided incentives, maybe child care or something, but incentives to get out and never get in the rut. As I believe with all my heart that every one of us have God-given assets and potential that he expects us to use. And I agree with the preacher that said, but God doesn't want us to lean on our shovel and pray for a hole. You know, he actually expects us to help ourselves as we go. But seriously, that was a driving force in making me want to go to Washington with a heart of compassion but also some common sense. We should be about encouraging people to do the right thing. So, all that said, coming around to Title II of the Social Security Act, wouldn't it be a good idea if the federal government had financial incentives to encourage blind people to work and not penalize them for working? Now, but that's not what we're doing. We're penalizing the blind if they have the audacity to go out and work and show that they can make a living. Well, that's ridiculous. And that's one of the things I wanted to come to Washington and try to change, is where we don't use common sense. We don't push people and inspire people to reach their great God-given potential. It just seems that it's silly not to amend the Social Security Act to address that, and I hope that we can even get that done this year. We'll keep pushing on that. Well, I just want to finish by telling you a very personal story that really taught me a huge lesson. And again, I don't try to impose my beliefs on anyone else, but it was really enlightening to me. Back in the 80s, my mother had a brain tumor that was eventually going to take her life. My mother was a brilliant woman, came from a very poor family. They lived in Waco, a block away from Baylor. She worked full-time and put herself through Baylor in less than 3 years. She was such a smart lady. And anyway, she and my dad did what the doctors recommended, and it was clear there was nothing else that could be done. And her neurologist told us at one point, I don't know how many months left she has, it may not be many, and I have an older sister and two younger brothers, but we had all been there different times with our kids and our spouses. And mother loves our spouses and just really, really loved the grandchildren. But we decided, let's go back to Mount Pleasant, where I grew up, and spend a weekend with the four kids, mother and dad, just a special weekend just for mom's sake and for our sake as well. And so we did that, and on Saturday, we were sitting around the breakfast table as we'd done so many times during the years growing up. And my family is very sarcastic. We will defend each other to the hilt against anybody attacking from the outside, but boy, we make a lot of fun of each other on the inside. Well, we love each other, but we can kid around and make fun, just have a good time together like that. And for 3 or 4 hours, we were just sitting around the table laughing and stirring up old memories and poking fun at each other, good-natured, and it was just a wonderful time. But at that point, my mother was not able to speak very well, and so she had not said anything for a number of hours. And finally, she spoke up and said this, and we all got very quiet because this was the lady we came to honor. And we would have been there all night if that's what had taken her to get out whatever it was she wanted to say. But she pushed on and she got out, "Is my favorite thing." Now, that seemed like a strange thing, but the next day on the way back to Tyler, it hit me. There was a lawyer that asked Jesus, "What's God's favorite thing?" And he said, "Love God." And the other ones like it, "Love each other. And on those two things hang all the law and the prophets." So whether you believe in God or not, if there were a God, doesn't it make sense that he would feel like my mother, that his two favorite things would be loving each other and loving him? Doesn't that make sense? And it's with that sentiment that I say how proud I am that you allowed me to share a few minutes with you here this morning. I look forward to hearing from you on issues where I may be blind and I don't see what's clearly in front of me and I need your help to show me. I would look forward to hearing from you. And let's work together. Let's love each other. And let's make this a better place. Thank you very much. God bless you.
Yeah, you do make a good speech, Congressman. I especially like those parts where you're saying what a great idea our legislation was.
Yeah.
We'll be talking to you. You can count on it. We're glad you could come with us today. And God bless you, too.